What are you up to now, you know?
Well, I'm just trying to find some financing for some movies, and developing some projects that I'll try to make. And one of them is the probably the most interesting one for fans is that I'm working on on the script for a reboot of Reanimator.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, and then the other one is a project that I have that I already have the script. Plus, I'm working on I have the novel and a comic book almost ready to be, to written called The Pope.
The Pope.
The Pope, and it's about a seminary dropout who dresses up like the Pope and kills pedophile priests.
Yeah, that's one cool, title for Italy too. That's good.
Maybe they won't like it in Italy.
Yeah, we will. And which are, in your opinion, the main differences in making a movie in Europe and in the States?
Well, I think maybe the main difference, at least when I've, let's say the main difference generally is that most of Europe has subsidies. They have, they give subsidies from the government. Now I know Italy really, Italy gives subsidies, but most independent filmmakers can't get them. So I know that's true. But I've made movies in Italy, but that, of course, it was years ago. I made two movies in Rome in 1986, I think. But we didn't have any subsidies. The crews, I would say, the difference in making the movie in Europe, let's see, because there's a lot of different levels, isn't there? In making movies in Spain, it was the we got subsidies. When you get a subsidy, it changes the way movies are made because it's not strictly made for, it's not strictly a profit arena. It's not strictly a profit project because sometimes you can, if the government's paying for it, one, you have to make a movie that the government approves of. And two, you have to make a movie that can get the subsidy, and it means that even if the movie doesn't make its money back, sometimes you don't lose money. So there's that. There's the problem when you make a movie under subsidy. So for example, the last movie that I actually made was called Amphibious 3D, and I shot it in Indonesia, but I finished it in Belgium and in Netherlands and in Finland to do the post-production. And that just means that you have to hire certain nationality people. You have to pay companies that are in a certain country so that you can get the tax incentive. That changes the way you make movies. Mostly people talk about, how to qualify for the tax credits and less about who's the absolute best to do a job. There's also kind of a different mentality in Europe, I think, for making movies. There's, I think, more of a artistic cultural sense to the movies than there is in the US. The US, it's really so much more about what the box office is. Your value as a filmmaker is almost just directly related to how much money your movies make. Whereas in Europe, movies, even if they don't make a lot of money, the filmmakers can have some they can have a lot of reputation because of their artistry as artists. That's kind of different. Sometimes the crews in Europe aren't quite as used to. I'll give an example. In Spain, when I shot there, it's not easy to replace people on your crew. If someone isn't doing a good job or you want somebody else, it's very difficult to replace them in Spain. It becomes a problem with the rest of the crew, like you shouldn't do it. Whereas in the U.S., you can hire and fire people on a crew quite easily. So those are some of the issues. The crews in Europe aren't maybe as familiar with genre movies, especially the special effects, and even the style of a genre movie isn't considered to be respectable, maybe, and maybe the crews don't have the same abilities. But it's hard to say, because now, for example, in Spain, when I first went there, it was very difficult to find the crews to kind of understand the type of movie we were making. But now Spain makes lots of those movies, mm-hmm. you know? And I think, you know, when I worked in Italy, the crew was a much older generation. You know, when mm-hmm. This was in the 80s. The crew, the men on the crew, because there wasn't many women, they were much older than I was,
yeah.
generally. In the U.S., the crews I would work with would be my age or younger, because I was making low-budget, independent, non-union movie, and so you use the people who are the cheapest or the young people. But in Europe, the crew wouldn't be so young. But that said, in Spain, when I worked there in the 2000s, the crews were pretty, you know, they weren't so much older or anything like that. It wasn't like that, you know. The kinds of movies we made, we used a younger crew. And I think that the abilities of the crews are the same everywhere in the world. I even made a movie in Indonesia, and then you're dealing with, you know, Muslims. You've got to stop to pray all the time, and your people are working with no shoes on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They have a complete different mentality.
Yeah.
Complete. In the U.S., it's more likely that you'll work day and night for a long time. You can work really long hours. In Spain, for example, they're much more strict. In Spain, you have to eating the meal. The lunch is very important. Same in Italy.
Yeah, siesta time.
Food is very important. And in the U.S., yeah, the food's important, but you know, you get your little time to eat and you move on. It's different, but then. You have to include places like Romania as Europe, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Well, all these low-budget movies are made in Romania now.
That's incredible. Right? Unbelievable.
I think it's different, but I found that making movies is the same everywhere. The kinds of movies I make, I think I can get more. You know, there's more experience in Los Angeles, say, than if I go to a country in Europe to
yeah.
make that movie. It's different because of the culture.
Yeah.
But I don't think making a movie is different anywhere. And I do think that maybe if there was one general notion, I would say in Europe, even a genre movie is given a little more sense of a little more artistic sense, you know?
Yeah.
I think you see that. In the U.S., the movies tend to have a much clearer, a story sense that is much more clear.
Yeah, that's true.
In Europe, the story sense won't be so clear. A lot of European movies, you look at genre movies, and the story isn't as clear, but the artistic element will normally be pretty important, even on a not very good movie. Whereas in the US, even if the movie's not any good, generally the story is very clear. Sometimes that's negative because you watch, I'm sure, you know, a lot of people watch American movies, they go, God, these movies, you just always know what's going to happen. You know, you see the beginning, you know what's going to happen because the story is going to be very, very direct.
Very dear.
But maybe that ultimately is the most generalized difference, perhaps.
Definitely. And what did it mean for you to do a masterpiece as Society back in 1989 in the States? And how did the establishment react to Society?
Well, you know, it didn't come out in the US for a couple of years after I made it. And I never thought, I thought the movie was a complete failure when I made it because I was living in the US and it was just kind of, I don't know, sort of ignored. The reviews were terrible, like in Variety, the review called it a rough trade gay movie or something.
Oh my
Something really
God.
terrible. And then I found out that in Britain it was actually quite, it did pretty well and it got some good reviews and in some other countries, but it wasn't, I didn't think that I didn't even have the idea that it was in any way a success. For many years. So I never felt like I felt like I, when I made Society, I thought it was great. I had the best time of my life. I just thought, wow, this is so great. But then most people didn't care for it. And I thought, because I knew it was different when I made it, you know, I knew that it was different, but then I thought, well, it's my first time directing. I get to try something, you know. It wasn't until many years later that it started seeming like, wow, this movie's pretty good. And now and then, of course, when I found out it was much, you know, many years later, then I found, wow, in some countries it's considered a good movie. And then I found that there was people who really liked it and who would contact me. And then that made me feel great because it, I felt like, oh, well, I didn't completely fail that.
That's weird because I mean in the mid 90s when me, my friends, we were teenagers, it was normal for us to consider Society as a very high quality cult movie, and we would never have imagined that in the States it was so different, you know, the reactions.
Yeah, they it really was. I think there was a, well, you have to remember too, when it was made in 1988, and when at that era, 88, you know, 90, the early 90s, that was the video era, and the at that time, actually in the 90s, the video was going down until the DVD came out. So the video was already going down. It wasn't a movie that in, I think in Italy it played on TV, but
Definitely.
in most countries it wouldn't be able to play on TV. And they didn't have all the cable channels then. The other big issue is that there wasn't so much communication amongst fans and filmmakers like today. Like today, you just go on Facebook, or you go on the internet, or you know, it's like everybody's in touch, you know, and you can find the that pe what people think very quickly. And now, for example, I get, you know, all this sudden, you know, I get messages about Society and stuff, and this is like quite a long generation later.
Yeah.
You know, it's been 30 years. So back then, there wasn't much communication. Somebody would send you a letter, you know?
Yeah.
And if somebody wanted it in a festival, they'd send you a letter. So I really wasn't, you know, I went to Europe to the festivals back then. I think I only went to one festival that Society was in, and that was Sitges. And in Sitges, they gave the prize for the best special effects to Miracle Mile instead of Society.
Yeah, that's...
I don't know if you know Miracle Mile.
No.
It's not a bad movie. It's by Steve DeJarnett. But the effects are like a helicopter crashing, that type of thing.
Oh, God.
It's physical effects. And I remember being happy that they invited me to a festival, but thinking, wow, they're not really... They yeah. really don't like this movie, you know, because obviously the effect, even if you don't like the movie, you have to recognize that the special effects are something really special.
Unbelievable.
You know, they're really, you know, aesthetically and in terms of technically, they're very good. But so I don't, you know, I thought it was going to, you know, when Reanimator came out, it was even on some of the top 10 lists. It was so successful, you know. But Society, I didn't have, there wasn't that same experience. So I thought that, for a few movies, I really tried to do everything I could. I tried to be so out there, you know. And then I was just trying to learn how to make a better movie. And I tried different genres and different types of challenges.
Yeah.
But it was very gratifying later when I found that Society still had some people who appreciated it for what I liked about it, what I was trying to do. So in the U.S., for example, people didn't. There was a sense that it just wasn't a very good movie. I don't know how they looked at it. You know what I mean? Because it's not, it has a traditional structure, but it's not, you know, when people, you know, for me, when I made it, I would say it's not really a horror movie. And I didn't say that because I don't think a horror movie is a high, something that is not respectable, because I love horror. I'm a big horror movie fan, you know, but I saw it because it seemed weirder than horror, you know, to me. And I used to call it psycho fiction, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
But it was, it wasn't a typical movie. I think the audience in the U.S. couldn't understand it. And you have to understand, too, in the United States, there's a sense that there's no class. It's not a class society, that everybody's in the middle class. Now it's less with the big depression, the recession, and the 1% and all that. People understand more that some people are really, really, really wealthy, and a lot of people don't have anything. But everybody feels like it's a middle class society. Whereas in Britain, where it did very well, they are very, very aware historically, and Europe is in general, historically, of the reality of class. You know, it's not some abstract concept. You really, it's really, you know, in the U.S., it being such a young country, it was just a colony of Britain, right? So you have a country that's only a couple hundred years old. It's a colony of Britain. It was begun by people who owned their own farms. There was never a tradition of real nobility. There was never a royal tradition. There was never a tradition of serfs. You know, there was a tradition of slavery, of racial slavery. Whereas in Europe, you know, the slavery and serf tradition, it didn't have to do with race necessarily, you know. And the way the history of Europe evolved, class has played a very huge part in it. You know, U.S. never... ever had a class revolution. Europe had great you know, great revolutions in class. So I think in the U.S. there's they just don't understand the basis of class, and that there are, you know, that this is a very real thing, and I came into it from the 60s when politics was very important, you know, during all the tumultuous 60s, and I was, you know, and at that time too there was a sense that politics was fun too. It was fun to go out on the streets, you know. So I wanted to, when I saw the script and I saw that there was this, because it dealt with the Beverly Hills Society, I tried to bring out more of the political part and the and as well as the incest part, which never really came out in the script so much. And then I also added the, you know, all the fantastic stuff. In the original script, it was just a blood sacrifice, which to me seemed very boring because I like more weird things. So I tried to create a complete mythology for society. You know, how you could have these different classes, how you could have, how could it evolve if it was a science fiction type story. So I invented a complete idea of that, which I never really told to the audience. I never had somebody stand at the blackboard and explain it, but I had certainly enough information to get it. When he would say at the big, when the boy finds out that everybody really is following him, and he says, and the judge says, oh, we're not, or a psychiatrist says, oh, we're not from outer space or anything like that, and we're a different species from you. And it's funny because I was reading political history recently where they said that the aristocratic class in Europe during the 1700s actually believed they were a different species from the lower class.
That's...
They felt they really, and they used the word species. They were, you know, it wasn't scientific because people weren't so scientific then.
Of course.
And especially in Britain, you know, they had this idea that they were, you know, just like in the U.S. or in all over the world, let's be serious, the black slaves were, and black people, by a lot of people, were and are considered less human, you know?
Yeah.
And this is, so it's not so difficult to understand how somebody think, oh, we're a different species. If you think a different race is a different species, when people, you know, when you own, you know, 10,000 serfs, they're different from you, you know? So I think that that idea is, that's the idea at the base of society. And I tried to we just dealt with it within Beverly Hills, because that's, in the U.S., what have you got? You know, there's not much history here. You know what I mean? You don't have these deep, long histories. You've got what, you know, you have pop culture.
Yeah.
And so that's what the Beverly Hills thing is. I think it's I thought the movie was a lot of fun. I just thought it was delightful, you know? So it's really, I'm really happy that it's, that there's still some people who like it, because probably if there's any movie that really, you know, reflects, you know, what I like in society. You know, and I've done many kinds of movies, and I know some people think I should do, you know, I should only do what, you know, something like that, or, but you know, when you make movies, it's like if you cook, you know, if you're a chef, and you're a really great, maybe you're a great, you know, pasta chef or something, but sometimes, hey, you want to try to make some sushi.
Yeah, something, you know, different.
Well, you want to try some tapas, or, you know, you, it doesn't mean, you know, it may not be, maybe you would be best if you just kept doing more and more different developments on your pasta or something. But it's not, you know, it's like anybody, if you're a writer, Maybe you're an interviewer or you do all genre movies, but you really like, I love genre movies, I love if it comes down to it, I love like horror, I like the weird stuff, I like surrealism expressions, but I like the I like art movies too, I like epic movie, and there's different movies I like, but if my main taste, of course, has to do with the kinds of things I make. So as you make movies, I've tried to do a lot of different types of movies, always in genre, but trying to get a bigger budget or make something for a bigger audience. I saw with Society that my audience was very small. They're just, most people just, they don't... I would say, if I want to be good to myself, I'll say, oh, they just don't understand it. But if I'm not being good to myself, I say, oh, they just don't like it. It's, I'm not Steven Spielberg. My taste isn't the popular taste. The really lucky people, their taste is the taste of everybody. My taste, I wish it was more popular, because then I would have bigger budgets and I'd have more success. But it's not. My taste is very, there's certain types of people that like it,
So, as final words, what kind of suggestions would you give to young filmmakers?
Well, my suggestion is to make films.
Yeah, always working.
It sounds so silly, because the, it's like when people say, there's always this thing when people ask a novelist or a writer, oh, what suggestion could you give me to write? He said, just write. Making films is a little more complicated than writing, not more difficult, but more complicated, because you need so many different people to work with you on a movie. Making a movie, it's even more complicated than having a musical band, like a rock and roll band.
Yeah.
But even a rock and roll band, when they just have a few people, you see they always end up having trouble.
Yeah.
Who's in charge? I'm sure you've had friends that have rock and roll bands or something.
Yeah, I am in a rock and roll band.
You are? So it's always a fight.
Yeah.
And if you could just find three other people who would practice all the time and do what you wanted them to do and show up every day, you could have a success, right?
Yeah.
But you can't unless you can afford to pay them. Now, if you can hire everybody and pay them a weekly salary, and big band and the successful bands, that's what they do, The Rolling Stones are owned by Mick Jagger. Know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And they hire people. They split it. You have to be a good businessman to have a successful musical group. That's a fact. But that's also the fact with movie making. And it's even more complicated if you think about it, because you need so many more types of skills. The great thing today is that you can actually make a complete movie by yourself with your computer. And the last things I shot, I used a 60D camera,
Yeah.
That camera, the Canon?
I've heard about it, and I also known something about people shooting now movies with iPads, iPhones, and stuff,
Well, the 60D is an HD camera. It's a still camera that you can shoot on up to 60 frames a second.
Okay.
And you can make a full movie. This movie, did you see this movie from Germany called Urban Explorer?
No, I have to check this out.
This is a movie about kids that go underground. It's a horror movie. It was all shot on the 60D. I saw it projected, This camera costs €1,000. And it can make a real movie. That's incredible.
Yeah, that.
And you can get Final Cut for your computer, and you can get After Effects, and you can get Pro Tools. you're using the same programs the professional uses.
That's incredible.
You know? Okay, what you don't have, but when you have to get the actor, the lights, the guy who can light it,
yeah,
the artistic part of it, it's just like I can say, you know, I can get the same paints and the same materials that Michelangelo had.
That's incredible.
The same ones. Well, that doesn't mean I'm going to make a painting like Michelangelo. If you make a little movie, you have to think that you should not try to make something bigger than your resources.
Yeah.
So if you can look at a painting by, you can look at a great mural by Michelangelo in a church and be awestruck. But you know, you can also look at a little drawing by Michelangelo and it's just as artistic, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
It's just the drawing with a charcoal or a pencil.
Yes, can
be fantastic. So when you're making a movie, don't try to do the mural. Do a beautiful drawing. That's a low budget movie.
Yeah.
You know, keep it within the means. But do it. That's the main thing. The other thing, because if you do it, then you'll learn how to do it. There's no reason not to make movies. But take it seriously. Write a script. Do it properly. Try to be very serious. Try to find people who will work with you seriously. Don't try to make your friends who are actors play a part that they really aren't professionally prepared to play, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because it'll look silly if you try to get your friend to play a judge and he's a 26-year-old guy that doesn't have much experience in acting,
yeah,
and you don't have money for costumes and sets. It's going to look crazy, you know? Have him play something that he can play. But do it seriously. That's the first thing. Mm. And then the second thing is try to study the business of film.
Yeah.
Try to really pay a lot of attention or find a partner who will pay a lot of attention to the business of it. Because just like a rock and roll band, talent isn't enough. Talent, you know, there's, you know, maybe you're so special that they're going to, you have so much talent that, you know, somebody's going to come and, you know, give you a high position. But that's probably not going to happen.
Yeah.
You need not just talent. You need a business partner, or you have to understand the business so that you can find how do you get the money from the production. If you can get the money from it, then you can raise money. But I think this is the big thing, is to try to find a way to pay for it.
Yeah.
If you're rich, okay, you can do it as a hobby. But maybe a hobby isn't really what you want to do anyway. Maybe you want to have an audience.
Yeah.
To have an audience, you have to find a way to communicate with them. You got to find a way to get it to them. Today with the internet and YouTube and all this, wow, you can do a lot. Look at what those guys that did Space Wreck, the
yeah,
Finn guys, and now they made a 5 million euro movie called Iron Sky.
Incredible.
And they started out just doing it in their apartment. So it can be done. Just do it.